Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 74 of HER, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, and her life. Well, today we're going to be talking about how good it feels to actually suck at something. Pretty provocative, huh? Well, before we get into this segment, I just want to make sure you know that it's made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They are delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix customized for women. Trust me, you won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, please go over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And just a quick reminder to hop on over to iTunes after our episode to rate and review this podcast, because guess what? We love to hear from you, and I read all this stuff too. All right, now it's time for HER.
HER, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind.
Her body.
Her life. It's all about HER.
In this episode, we're talking about something really interesting. It's got quite a twist to it, and that is, it's okay to feel great, to suck at something. Yeah, you don't have to be perfect all the time. We have a terrific expert to help us understand what this is really all about. It's Dr. Holly Parker, who is a faculty member in the Department of Psychology at Harvard University and clinical psychologist at the Edith Norse Rogers Memorial Veterans Hospital. She is also the author of If We're Together, Why Do I Feel So Alone? How to Build Intimacy with an Emotionally Unavailable Partner. And she also has written When Reality Bites, How Denial Helps, and What to Do When It Hurts. Oh, Dr. Parker, welcome to the HER podcast.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's a real pleasure to be on your show, and I hope that you and your guests are doing wonderfully.
Well, okay, now, women by definition and by nature are perfectionists. We like everything to be perfect and everything has to come together and we're just so happy. But what if we suck at something? We're just rotten at it. Do we avoid it? Do we celebrate the fact that we suck at something? Is there something special about that that's actually kind of cool? Help us understand this.
Yeah, that's a great question. It's interesting. When we think about what it means to suck at something, right, that oftentimes we are, not always, but oftentimes sucking at something is a sense of, comes from comparing, right? So we're thinking about, you know, how we do relative to somebody else, right? If we're comparing to our friends, to people who are more advanced at whatever it is that we're trying, sometimes we can label sucking at something, we can say, oh, I suck at this, when in reality, we're learning. And, you know, we don't have a lot of experience yet, but it's that process of learning that's very natural, right? We're not going to start off playing volleyball the first time and being Olympic-level volleyball players, right? Or even if we're never Olympic-level volleyball players, right? What it means to learn that particular skill, when we struggle, we can expect ourselves to not have that and say, well, God, why am I struggling? I must suck at this. And it's the challenge of, and also what's very natural about avoiding things we do that we suck at is that, one, it's so seductive to avoid that, because, you know, it can feel uncomfortable, right? If we think, oh, God, I'm bad at this. And we like to have a sense of mastery. We like to feel that we're able to do something, right? It can often be a way to affirm ourselves, right? That, you know, we feel better. And if we suck at something, then that can feel discouraging. Also, when we're in the process of learning, it can just be frustrating because we make mistakes, we try, we continue to make lots of mistakes, and that can be difficult. If we can overcome that, if we can give ourselves permission to do something wholesale that we suck at. You use the word liberating, and I think that is a perfect word. The freedom, it gives us room to do what we love. It gives us room to pursue something and to embrace the journey of learning rather than putting the pressure on ourselves to have arrived at our destination. And it gives us room to be ourselves in this world, right?
Well, I like that learner thing. The great Zen teacher Shunryu Suzuki once said, "In the beginner's mind, there are many possibilities. In the expert's mind, there are few." And therefore, you know, when you're out there actually learning and just putting it out there and, you know, just trying to do your best, well, guess what? You live in the possibility. And so why limit yourself by being literally constrained and wrapped and basically shackled by perfectionism? Because, you know, the perfectionist will settle for nothing less than perfection. And when that happens, you're left with nothing. Now, look, you and I are women. We know that it is our nature, right, to want to go for that perfect place. Guys don't do this. They're kind of like they settle. They go, well, you know, it's not bad. Nobody died. Women are like, it's not perfect. So help us. You know, you're the psychologist now. Go into a woman's psychology and say, how do you break through that perfectionism?
You know, perfectionism is tricky because it also has, I think of perfectionism as a bit of a siren song. It's this idea we have that, okay, we have to do, you know, that people can have, I've got to be able to do this right. It can show up in a number of different aspects of life that if I get this perfect, then that's when it's going to be good enough, right? Perfection, comes with it. True perfectionism is just this an overwhelming pressure, this need to have, control over the process, the need to have things just so, the need to not really sit with making mistakes. And even though for a lot of people, actually both men and women alike, it can feel very, like that is the pathway to achieve success, that if we do perfect things, then somehow, that makes us okay. The problem with that is, and I think this is one way of getting out of this, is to remember that actually that there's a phrase that I love. I didn't invent it. I wish I did. It's fantastic, which is the perfect is the enemy of the good. And the challenge is that when we strive for literal perfection, when we have to get everything just right, there's actually research indicating that we wind up suffering in our lives, our quality of life suffers, we're more at risk for suicide, we're more at risk for depression, we're more at risk for anxiety, and also our ability to actually do the things that we want to do goes down. Just think of trying to turn in that work project on time, trying to do it well, when you have this sort of Damocles hanging over your head telling you, it's got to be just right now. Now, maybe this isn't good enough, or maybe that isn't good enough, right? Maybe you need to ask for an extension on it because you don't have it just perfect. It can wind up getting in the way of our ability to be creative, to just let go, to get things done and to be productive. So perfectionism is, I say it's a siren song because it seems tempting. It seems like it's going to get us to where we want to go, and it's going to make us feel better, and it's going to help us achieve, but ultimately it decreases the odds of that.
Absolutely. You know, I always say perfectionism leads to paralysis. You can't get off first base. Because immediately you're saying you failed because, you know, what can you do? I have an interesting story, and that is one day I was at a special White House briefing of Billie Jean King's HBO special on women in sports. And they had many of the top names of women's sports. And here I am sitting next to Nadia Comaneci, you know,
wow.
who most people remember
yeah.
as having, and I quote, the perfect score as a, I believe she was only 14 years old gymnast. Of course, they've changed the rules now, so you have to be at least 16 to be in the gymnastics. But, you know, I looked at her and here she is married and kids and, you know, the whole thing still looks amazing and is training and, you know, young people and all that. So I decided to play with her a little bit. And so I looked at her and I winked and I said, so how does it feel to be perfect? And then, of course, you know, because everyone remembers at the Olympics. I mean, even if you weren't born yet, I mean, you could just look on the YouTube. It's pretty amazing when they, you know, flipped up the scores. And I mean, it literally was just perfect across the board. So she smiled. And of course, she's only been asked this question maybe a million times. And so she's got the answer all ready to go. And she said, you know, Dr. Peake, I'm not perfect. My score was. That in and of itself in that answer was spectacular.
Yeah.
Then she went ahead and we discussed it. And what it really boils down to is that perfection in many respects is something that can be measured. Like I have perfect breaks. Why? Because I just did a break test. I have numbers. I have ways to be able to measure and I have metrics to this.
Mm-hmm.
I want my breaks to be perfect. I want to be able to say that word. I want my computer to be perfect because I know that the minute it becomes imperfect, it's got to go into little Mr. Apple and then we do it all over again until it does it. But can you show me a perfect rose? Because if you do, I'll show you another one that may be even more, and I quote, perfect. In other words, living natural things are magnificent. They're all magnificent, gorgeous, beautiful, and I quote, perfect. They all are. And you're the one who came up with that issue of comparison, you know, when you're comparing people, you know, how good are you or whatever. So, you know, I consider perfection, especially for women, to be a P word. I call it the P word. No more P word. We're done with that. Okay. You know, get rid of that perfectionism. Now, I'm going to go to a different place with you now, Dr. Holly.
Sure.
And that is maybe a way to get women, you know, our wonderful Her podcast listeners, to really wrap their heads around this. Is to go to the place of play.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
you know,
that's a good
when
P
you're
word.
Out there,
yeah.
Well, you know, when you're out there and you're playing,
yeah.
you're all trying to do cartwheels on the grass and everybody's mm-hmm. falling on top of each other. When you're in a Zumba class, you know, when you're just, you know, having a blast, throwing frisbee and everything, how do you throw a frisbee perfectly? Is anyone even giving a damn?
That's right.
So doesn't play make perfect a moot point?
You know, I love that question so much. Play does make perfect a moot point because when we're playing, we're not trying to, you know, the goal is met in and of itself. When we're having fun and we're having a good time, mission accomplished, you know, then that becomes the end point. If we're trying to be perfect, that inherently, in and of itself, is laced with pressure. And I'm talking about real perfectionism. You know, there are people who will, you know, really strive, you know, and try for excellence in something. And, you know, that can have its place, certainly. Even people, though, who strive for excellence aren't expecting themselves to be perfect, right? So it's this very intense kind of pressure that is laced with anxiety and that, you know, play play isn't pressure. Play is just fun. And I think play is a space where you are in flow, you are centered, you are in the moment, you are letting your hair down and being willing to be silly, to make mistakes. You don't care, right? You may not care what other people are thinking and doing. You are just centered and in the moment. And that willingness to play, that, you know, I think what can be really helpful is for people to really stop and think if they're nervous about doing something because they're concerned that others will see them, right? I think embarrassment
judge
can be a
them.
Big part of this. Yeah, judge
right.
them. A question that I would invite your listeners to think about is when they find themselves doing that, which is a very natural thing to do, by the way, I want to normalize that, to stop and say, okay, wait a second. What kind of experience do I want? You know, why do I want to do this activity? Do I really want to do it to be seen? Or do I want to do it for my health? Or do I want to do it because I'm going to enjoy it? Or because I want to learn something new? Because I want to challenge myself and expand my horizons in this really fun way? If that's the goal, I think for most people, when they think about trying something new, their goal is actually not to be seen. Their goal is to really, you know, to play, to have fun, to learn, to grow. I would invite your listeners to center themselves on whatever their purpose is and what they want, because really, I mean, life is short. You know, if we lose something, if we drive all of our activities based on whether someone will judge us for it, you know, to give ourselves the freedom and the permission and the compassion to really do something because we want to do it and let ourselves really be immersed in that experience. And it can be liberating. It actually made me, it makes me think about a point that you raised before when you said how we can really limit ourselves when we're only willing to do things that we feel we're super good at.
You remember how many women will say, they'll say, oh, I don't want to try that because,
yeah.
I did it once
yeah.
and I was horrible at it. I sucked
that's
at
right.
it. And
yes.
instead, if you turn it into something that's not a competition,
mm-hmm.
you know, instead it's like, turn it into play. Like, oh, come
yes.
on, let's just play. Let's
that's right.
just play. The minute
that's
you
right.
say those words, it's like all the pressure's off. Okay, so we're all going to look
yeah.
like idiots doing this. That's great.
Exactly. And, you know, and I think humor, like right along with play, is the importance of humor and comedy and bringing,
yeah.
some, you know, bringing that element in and saying, you know, it's hilarious that I'm terrible at this. You know, I don't care. I'm going to do it anyway. And I think it's funny. Like, it actually reminds me of my husband and I were having a conversation recently because he loves golf and he's really good at it. I mean, when he hits that ball, it's like butter sailing off into the wind. Me, I'm lucky if I can get it to get into the air, if I can get it to go straight. There are times when I swing at the ball and I swing into the air and I twirl around. I mean, it's a real comedy of
yeah.
errors. But I told him recently, I suck at golf. That is one of the many things I think I suck at. And I said to him, I said, well, is there a golf course that you really want to go to that you haven't gone to yet? And I said, because if you have one, I'll go with you. And I said, and I'm not fit to play on a course. I said, you know what? I'm just going to go and I'm going to hit the ball. And so I don't hold other people up. I just, you know, if I don't get any distance, I'll just pick up the ball and walk with you and just keep going. And that's fine. It really doesn't matter. And when I said that to him, I felt so free as I was saying that, because I wasn't telling myself, oh, you know, I better not go out there and it would be too much if I didn't do a good job out there. It's like, you know, the goal isn't that. It's to get out
yeah.
there, spend time with my husband and enjoy the greenery and just have some fun. And it, and
well,
it, it's
you know, there you go.
Way.
You said that, you said the F word, fun. Okay. So play and fun go hand in hand.
Yes.
And, you know, I was actually inspired about this segment when I had read a New York Times blog very recently with the title, It's Great to Suck at Surfing. And it was about, you know, some woman who just, I mean, seriously, she was, you know, constantly getting, you know, clocked in the head with her surfboard when a wave would come. Well, good luck with that. And then she'd get slapped around by waves and back and forth. But, you know, at the end of the day, she just loved coming back to it again and again and again, because there was just pure, unmitigated joy in just doing it and really not worrying about the fact that she wasn't perfect at it, that someone wasn't like rating her or judging her. She literally was just out there letting it rip and simply doing her best and laughing her head off. You know, when she came up out of the waves and, you know, things didn't look quite so perfect, as it were, as she was trying to ride that wave. And she realized how incredibly freeing that was to not have any of that. And I'm thinking, what do you think, Dr. Holly, about recommending more play, more of this playful fun, so that women especially can get used to not being perfect and pushing themselves to that craziness all the time, letting go and perhaps feeling a level of freedom that they've never had before. Gives them practice at doing that. What do you think about that as an exercise, as something that you should incorporate into your day?
Absolutely. I mean, and there are some different benefits to that too. So by you know, I would invite your listeners to think about something that they've really been wanting to do, or they've really been wanting to try, but that they have no experience with whatsoever, and to try it, to see what happens, and to acknowledge that, you know, there may be that voice that comes up that says, "Oh my God, you're never going to be able to do that," or, "Wow, you are, you know, compared to other people, you're going to look like you don't know what you're doing." And instead, to turn, one, to acknowledge it's there, and two, to turn that around, and say, "Yeah, it's absolutely because I'm learning this." And you know, even if I've done it a million times, the point is not to impress anybody. The point is I'm doing this for me, and I think that that's something that a lot of women don't have practice in, is doing things just for them. That there's, you know, so much caregiving and caretaking and thinking about what others think, right? Or you know, what kind of impression that they're making. Instead, to have practice by trying something new that they're not good at, but that they want to do, that's fun. It gives it.
I love the whole issue of just, you know, letting it open up like that. And the fact that, you know, when you're playful and joyful, you're not stressed. You cannot do both at the same time. It's impossible. That's the way the human brain works. You're either turning on that part of the brain with the fight and flight response, or you're turning on that joyful part. You've got dopamine, you know, streaming your way. That's the pleasurable brain chemical. Or you've got a boatload of stress hormone coming your way. Which one do you want? This is your choice, right?
Yeah,
and so if you do the play and fun thing much more, you'll get yourself into a new place where you can kind of, you know, just jump out of your brain that's been so stressed out back and forth. Also, the other thing too is I think a lot of people, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, Dr. Holly. A lot of adults think play is for kids only.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, because we never stop valuing play. Play is essential, and play is something that I think the only difference between, actually not I think, I know, the only difference between adults and kids when it comes to play is that kids remember to play and they make it a priority, and adults forget. But it is something that we need, and it's something that's vital. If you watch people, adults, when they're in play, and you watch them light up and how happy they are and what that does to mood, play, as you so wonderfully put it, when we are having fun and we're playing, we are powerfully counteracting stress. We're managing stress. We're soothing our bodies. And leisure is actually a really important component of life. Having fun, boosting our mood. It's not just about managing the negative feelings, but it's about heightening the positive ones. And I think sometimes people can think, well, if I'm managing the negative ones, then that's living the best I can. And actually, I would invite people to reconsider that and think about how they can build more laughter and more fun and positivity and play into their lives. Because, you know, especially now, I think now more than ever, people are so overtasked, and they have so many things that they're doing, caring for other people, serious responsibilities. Oh, and by the way, in their jobs, they're being evaluated, right? They're being evaluated on their performance. So play is a way of attending to ourselves, of saying, what do I need, taking care of ourselves. And it's also a time when we just let the evaluation go. And we get
well. I think that's important. You know, really keep that in mind. As well as, there's one other thing too. Mm-hmm. If you forgot how to play, and I know a lot of you have, would you please go to a play yard? Watch children. Just watch them. They're just gleefully out there. They don't care. They're falling down on their little behinds. They stand up. They laugh their head off and back and forth. They don't care. And that's an important thing. Another thing is, I don't know about you, but I'm a real animal lover. I've had cats. I currently have a very handsome, I might add, black German Shepherd. And if you ever want to play, hang out with animals. Watch them. Play with them. Have a good time. Seriously, rent a child. I don't know. just find some way to be able to get yourself some more of that. Because then this whole issue of, sucking at something, not being good at something, mm-hmm. suddenly you realize it's a moot point. Doesn't matter anymore. Free yourself by making a lot more time in your daily life for fun and play. When you do that, you just hang out. Do your best with laughter and humor. You have a really good time. There's a fabulous study that was done a number of years ago by Stanford researchers that noted that children tend to laugh on average about 300 times a day. Adults about 10 to 12. Do you see a problem with this? Come on.
Huge problem.
We gotta, inject a lot more. So as we bring this wonderful segment on It Feels Great to Suck at Something to a close, Dr. Holly, can you give us a last word of wisdom?
Yeah, I would say, think about two things. One, think about the kind of life you want. And I think that's a question that we often don't think about. Like, how much humor, how much joy, how much playfulness do I want in my life? How much do I have it on a scale of 0 to 10 now? And where do I want to be? And how can I get there? Scheduling it in, making time for it. Because really, if you feel guilty, and I think it's very natural to feel, oh, God, I'm not using my time well, it is vital for living well, fun, and
you
play,
better
build
know
relationships.
It. It's, oh my gosh, it's vital. It's life-saving. Everyone,
yes.
We have been talking to our go-to psychologist, Dr. Holly Parker, who is with the Department of Psychology at Harvard University, and her latest book, If We're Together, Why Do I Feel So Alone? How to Build Intimacy with an Emotionally Unavailable Partner. Please go to her website, drhollyparker.com. Dr. Holly, thank you so much for being on the Her Podcast.
Oh, it was such a pleasure, Dr. Peek. Thank you anytime. And I wish
All
you
right.
and your listeners well. Thank you again.
awesome. Remember to catch every episode of Her. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. And please take just a few seconds here to rate and review our podcast, because we love to hear from you. So run on over to iTunes and do that. I'm Dr. Pam Peek. Follow me on Twitter at PamPeekMD. And you can also check out our Her Show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Thanks for listening, and stay well.